I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. In 1997, then-Mayor Emanuel Cleaver dismissed a light rail plan as touristy frou-frou. But now, as a U.S. congressman, he's hoping to secure a $25 million federal grant to help Kansas City build a streetcar starter line that would stretch from Crown Center to the River Market. But to build it, it'll take a lot more money, including a new tax on the district where the streetcar will run. This hour, the possibilities and politics of streetcars in Kansas City. Are they a vital part of public transit or an unnecessary expense? We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. The big election in this country isn't until November with this year's presidential race. But there's another vote just weeks away in Kansas City that will determine whether this city builds the first phase of a downtown streetcar system. Voters in the downtown area in a special district are being asked to support a tax to help pay for the system. Supporters call streetcars key for cities of the 21st century. Critics call them a giant waste of money. What do you think about streetcars in KC? That's our topic today. You can join our online conversation right now at KCUR's Facebook page or by tweeting us at KCUR Up to Date. With us today, Russ Johnson is a councilman from Kansas City's 2nd District. Councilman, good to have you.
Thanks, Steve.
Good
Glad
morning.
To be here.
David Johnson is a blogger at kclightrail.com. He's a transit user and he lives downtown. David, good morning to you too.
Good morning, Steve.
We'll also be joined by an opponent of this idea in just a little bit. Well, Councilman, voters can start casting ballots by mail around June 20th, and these are voters who live within this taxing district. How are you feeling about how the vote is going to go?
Well, I want to make sure a key point is understood. That if you want to vote in this election, you have to take the proactive step of applying
for
a ballot, and you have to do so by May 22nd.
You can do it online,
and
too,
you can do
right?
It, you can download, but you have to download the application at 16thcircuit.org is the court's website.
16thcircuit.org.
Yes, / streetcar. So far, I think it's going kind of as we expected. In any election for a municipality, you want to encourage high turnout, and we are doing everything we can to do that. But the reality is that we traditionally do not get high turnouts in municipal elections.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think that we should be surprised if that's the case, even though we've sent a letter out to every single registered voter in the district saying, you know, please apply and vote in this election. It's important.
And the district's boundaries roughly are what, Russ?
It's the river on the north. It's Pershing Road, roughly, Crown Center on the south.
Yeah.
It's Broadway on the west, and about McGee or mm-hmm. Oak, or it's a little bit further on the east side. I can't remember. And it's everything inside the loop.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're inside the loop, it's the entire area inside the loop.
David Johnson, what's your sense how this election is going? You live in the district. What do you make of it?
I've been working the ground war, if you will, for about a year since the study and the public outreach began. And the sense, at least from the people who are talking to me, and you know, they know I'm a transit supporter, is that this is the right project at the right time. I mean, we've had larger plans that have crumbled under their own weight and citywide elections that have failed. So when you look at those prior votes, you see consistently that there is political support downtown, strong political support, not just a simple majority, but like in the 60-70% range.
And people are behind it. Why? What's your sense?
I think they realize that it's an obvious thing for a city to have rail-based transit, and especially right in the urban core. I think it gets a little tougher when you look outside of the urban core, what we call the city. I think it's just a really obvious thing. I mean, you mm-hmm. go to cities that are peers of ours, they're doing it, they're playing catch up. It's a way to make us competitive with getting good paying jobs and young people to move back into the city to stem all those population losses.
And this starter line, David, will run from roughly River Market to Crown Center. So it's just a baby step here in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've taken attempted much bigger strides and those have failed. So, I mean, I think this is the ideal baby step. And then if that works, which I think everyone who supports it thinks it will, then we'll make it bigger. We'll take another baby step and go, you know, another direction or further south.
Councilman Russ Johnson, so much talk in town about how the city is going to pay for this and lots of talk about this $25 million Tiger Grant. Just to be clear, whether we get the grant or not from the federal government, this system, if voters approve it, in two elections actually, is going to go ahead. Do I have that right?
I don't think it's realistic to say that we would move ahead without federal funds, but we could move ahead without this particular grant. We would need federal assistance at some other level, and there are more than one ways to get federal funds. So the current timing is that is for the Tiger Grant. If the Tiger Grant is not received from us, you know, we don't receive the Tiger Grant, then we are going to pursue a different federal program. The timeline will be a little bit different. But you have to understand the federal money is not just $25 million. It's $25 million today, which means you don't have to borrow that money and pay the debt on it. So the real impact of that is much more than $25 million. It's a much bigger chunk of the project than people didn't realize.
So you're saying that some component of the financing here has got to include federal money.
Right. And we want the federal government to be a partner in this project. And traditionally, they've been a partner in many, many cities. It's Kansas City's time for the federal government to step up here.
How confident are you that we're actually going to receive this Tiger Grant, Russ? What are the prospects for it? I just heard Emmanuel Cleaver speak at Truman Days this last weekend out by the stadiums, and he was speaking fairly optimistically about what our prospects are.
Our prospects are very good. We put forward an excellent application. Everybody that's looked at it, whether they're from Kansas City or from other mayors have seen our application. Everybody agrees it's an excellent application.
Even though the competition is crazily intense here, lots of other cities also in the hunt.
Which is exactly why we did an excellent application. We knew that you couldn't just go through the motions, that you'd have to put this thing over the top, and we did. Ultimately, it is a political decision made by the Secretary of Transportation who gets the money. And LaHood has been a big proponent of these projects in many other cities. He is the only secretary to ever put forward a program to fund streetcar systems. We hope that he believes it's good for Kansas City. We believe it's good for Kansas City, and we're ready to move forward in that partnership.
Russ, is the Tiger Grant sort of Kansas City's best shot at quick federal money?
Yes, it is the only shot at quick federal money. Earmarks no longer exist. It used to be you'd go get an earmark.
It was easy in the old days.
Yeah, that doesn't happen anymore. Now you have to play by a different set of rules. And for the only program right now that's really available for this type of level of funding is the Tiger program.
Okay, so that's what you hope to get. And we'll know about that by June 1st, if I understand correctly.
The secretary has said June 1st, but maybe a week later. So he's hedging his bet.
Yeah. David Johnson, give us a little minute-long primer here. People will wonder, again, so much conversation in Kansas City over the years about light rail. That was the way to go. Clay Chastain pushed it so hard. That was the direction to go. What about streetcars? How are they different? What's the main difference? And how do they all compare to commuter rail, which is what the Jackson County executive Mike Sanders has been talking about for so long as well?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of amenities in the two-mile corridor along Main Street. I get the question a lot when I'm talking to other residents, like, how is it going to work for me? I mostly walk downtown, and I'm a big walker, too. I do use the bus, but, I mean, to me, we live in, you know, downtown is one of the few walkable areas in Kansas City, and, you know, take advantage of that. But this will help people who don't think like me, who think that 2 miles carrying a full bag of groceries is not, you know, something you would do every day. The half mile or whatever between the Kauffman Center and a Power and Light, you know, is not, you know, the easiest walk for everyone. So you have to kind of think outside of just your own two legs and what you're willing to do and how it will personally, you know, what good it'll be for you.
But how do streetcars differ just as you look at them from light rail? What are the physical differences?
How are they different? Lower impact on the urban environment. So, you know, full light rail, if you've been to Dallas where their light rail lines run through downtown on a city street, stations are bigger, the reconstruction of the streets was more significant, and the trains are longer. I mean, they're just bigger. Mm-hmm. And so these are more agile, smaller vehicles. Obviously, they don't hold as many people as a result, but we don't have massive transit ridership yet. So, but I should say that, you know, a streetcar will carry about double the amount of people as a bus.
Are they faster or slower than light rail cars?
In the middle of downtown, it's probably about the same. I mean, this plan does have the streetcar stopping every two blocks, and I think original, you know, light rail plans did not do that.
Yeah.
So travel time, though, if you compare to walking, which is really the competitive thing with the streetcar, because you want people to walk downtown, is where it's at, competitive with walking.
You know, Russ Johnson, if money wasn't an object, would you prefer light rail over streetcars, or are you just fine with streetcars?
Well, the technology really has blurred. You think about that old TV you had that was a big square heavy thing.
I just lugged one out of my house a couple weekends ago.
Okay, that's light rail.
And lived to talk about it.
That's kind of light rail. Everybody had one of those, and everybody was building one. And then this modern streetcar came along, and it's sleeker, it's thinner, it's lighter, it's got a better picture, and you can do more with it. But but they're not necessarily that distinct. You can use streetcar in a light rail type of environment much easier than you can use light rail in a streetcar type of environment. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in the urban area, the streetcar is going to be more of an urban circulator. But some of the vehicles, and we haven't done vehicle selection yet, but some of them have really high top speeds, 45 mile an hour, 50 mile an hour, which means you get them into a situation where you're like crossing the river. You can get across the river pretty quick.
You're talking about years down the road here, perhaps.
Perhaps, yeah. But similar to a light rail. The big, you know, light rail vehicles can hit 60, 65, 70 mile an hour. Streetcar cannot go that fast. So light rail is more commuter focused with a circulator feature. A streetcar is a circulator feature, a circulator focus with a commuter as a secondary. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of switching what your main focus is. But there is a blurred distinction between the two.
We're talking about streetcars in Kansas City this hour. If you want to join our conversation and offer us your opinion on what you think about all this, are streetcars a good idea or not, or just do you have questions about it, this would be a great time to call 816-235-2888. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR Updatedate. John from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question about funneling so much to a project that's going to benefit so few, when if we could secure the same federal dollars, which do have to be paid back by every citizen somehow, but if we could funnel those toward a more broad-reached effort, such as just enhancing the bus service, because light rail or streetcar definitely requires a lot of infrastructure, and it's less nimble if you look 20, 30, 40 years down the road. Just wanted to get some comments.
Yeah, John, thank you. Councilman Russ Johnson, why aren't buses simply good enough?
Well, the caller had a couple of points that I'd like to address. One, let's talk about buses versus fixed rail. It seems like sometimes this is a discussion about religion almost. It's more faith than it is based in fact, but the facts are out there. Streetcar provides much higher ridership than bus. Fixed rail does that. The classic case example is Tacoma, Washington. Tacoma, Washington had an express bus service. It went from point A to point B, and it had so many stops on it, and it was free. They decided that they were going to take the express bus out, and they put in a streetcar instead. It went the exact same locations. It went from point A to point B. It had the exact same stops. It ran the exact same route, and it had the exact same fare, free. Ridership increased 500%. That's
wow.
A fact.
Wow.
Now, whether you believe it or not, I can't help that, but that's a fact. Rails drive results. Rails drive economic development. It's that is the evidence is in.
And David Johnson, rails drive results. Why? What's the big appeal? Why are they so much better, so much more appealing than buses, which have been around forever?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's if I could explain all the intricacies of human nature, I'd probably be more than just a quality assurance engineer at a software firm. But for me personally, it's a ride comfort thing, and you know. You do learn just by riding, rail systems in other cities that they tend to be, and it's because they spend more money building them, the frequency is higher, and the schedules are usually a little bit easier to understand. I ride the bus in Kansas City. You know, I'm not a rail snob. I ride transit because I don't like driving and I don't like parking. and I like staying in the city. So I think a ride comfort, a reliability, and, you know, it feels premium, even though, you know, most people wouldn't say riding public transit is a premium experience. But, you know, rail versus bus, you know, it's a leg up.
I wanted to also talk about people voting on this in this election and why the voting district was chosen to be the boundaries that it is, Councilman Johnson. I mean, in theory, the entire city could have voted on this project, but the council chose just to have voters within these specified boundaries vote on it, voters who, in theory, will benefit the most from a new streetcar system. Why did you all opt to go that way? Why not have the entire city vote on a project like this?
Well, the boundaries not only define who gets to vote, but also defines where the tax is imposed. In 2008, we tried to impose a tax on the entire city to build fixed rail. It failed. In 2001...
That was a lot more expensive project, though.
Yeah. Well, but the reality was that it might have been more expensive, but you were building more to try to serve more of the city, of course. In 2001, a similar approach had been tried earlier by the city. It failed as well. So after going to the well twice and getting told, no, we aren't going to buy what you're selling, we had to think of a different way of generating the income necessary to pay for this and then deciding if there was a support from that voter pool within that area to support that. And that's the approach we're trying now. Now, maybe the answer will be no. I hope it's not. I don't think Mr. Johnson over here hopes it's not. But we've been told twice no, 2001, 2008. It costs a lot of money to put on an election. Mm-hmm. Do we want to keep going back to the voters and asking the same question and keep getting the same answer? Or should we be talking to the voters about something else? Should we be talking on a citywide basis about street infrastructure, about sewer system, or something else that matters more on a citywide basis?
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Jake from Kansas City, Missouri. Jake, good morning.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Boy, we should all be at the fishing hole in this kind of weather, shouldn't we? It's something else. I'm a bus guy, have been for years, and I just personally think the cost of fixed rail is just out of proportion to what you can do with buses, but more a question the process of the vote. If we're able to send first-class letters to every registered voter in the district, the taxing district, why aren't we able to put a return envelope in there and have somebody sign a ballot and then instead of going through all the, you know, having to jump through these hoops?
Councilman Johnson?
Well, a couple things. One, we're following state law. The state law procedure on this is very similar to the absentee procedure, and you can see that that's kind of where that came from. So we are, you know, if you're going to do a mail-in election, the state says this is exactly how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the letter that was sent out was not sent out by using taxpayer resources. That was a privately funded campaign, just like any other political campaign was, and that is the entity that sent out those letters. I am not personally involved with those decisions, so I can't speak to why that political campaign chose not to send a return envelope.
Jake?
Yeah, it just seems like, you know, it's, I don't know, the cat chasing its tail. There's a whole lot more went into it that needs to go into it to get votes from, you know, that select group of people.
Right. David Johnson, hop in here.
Yeah, I mean, I received one of those letters, and there was a return envelope in it. I mean, it wasn't stamped already. I had to, you know, figure out how to get a stamp and put it on the envelope. But yeah, I mean, it was the letter from the mayor explained the process and, you know, why we were doing the project. And The ballot application was in there, and a map of the district, and a return envelope. And we got it, you know, within a week after the judge made his decision on whether to have the election, or a week or two. So, I mean, to me, for having to do a mail-in election, it as a registered voter who received a letter, it seemed fairly logical.
Yeah. Okay. Back to some calls here. Tom from Kansas City, Missouri. Tom, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve. I live in the bubble where the taxes will go, and that's fine. And I think for me it'll be an extra $250 a year, which is okay. The thing that concerns me, though, is the social impact that a system like this could have. And I just wondered why we didn't run the streetcar east-west, maybe along 18th, 19th Street up the Southwest Boulevard to connect the various parts of Kansas City. Which to me, I'm from Philadelphia, but to me this place looks like Neapolitan ice cream, kind of with vertical lines. And I just thought the streetcar would be a wonderful way to connect the green zone, the Jazz Center, for instance, out to our hit fantastic places on Southwest Boulevard. So I'll just let people discuss that, because maybe we'll be going back to the drawing board next year. So maybe we could turn it on its side.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Yeah, interesting question. Why does it go vertical instead of horizontal, Russ?
Well, Tom made some excellent points. I completely agree with them. Streetcar should go east and west, north and south, as well as north and south. And it should go east and west for the exact reasons he stated. It provides the connectivity we need to areas that are where we already have made investments or areas that could see potential redevelopment.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that the federal government paid for our alternative analysis, and they paid for a north-south study. That's what they said was something that they wanted to study for.
So they told us what it was going to be.
Well, I mean, you have to apply for that money, but you apply in a very competitive environment, and you apply for you normally want to make sure you're putting your best foot forward. Generally, you can only submit one, and we partnered up with Jackson County when we did this, and Jackson County is kind of looking at the east-west commuter options.
Mm-hmm.
And so the streetcar could not overlap. You can't do two studies on the same thing at the same time. So it was kind of a decision we had to make in partnering with the federal government, and they paid for this. And once they said this is what we're going to pay for, that's exactly what we had to study.
And just to clarify one other point while we're on this area, David, there are going to be two votes here, right? The first vote.
That's right.
And what's the distinction here?
The way I understand it is the first vote is just to vote yes or no on forming this district.
Right.
Do we want to proceed with this method?
And the second vote's on the financing.
Right. And that's the numbers are still being worked on, I think. But there will be a cap that will be referenced, I believe, Councilman Johnson, in the ballot language for the formation. But that's just the cap, the maximum amount. That would be assessed.
And you need simple majorities, Russ, on both votes to pass this thing.
Correct. Of the votes cast.
And if the whole thing passes two times, how quickly might we see construction, assuming we get a Tiger Grant here?
If we get a Tiger Grant and the TDD formation and subsequent financing elections are successful, our schedule is to have streetcars operating in Kansas City, Missouri on April 30th of 2015.
Wow.
That we are moving at
fewer than 3 years away.
Yeah, we are moving at very fast pace on this project. But we've got very good consultants, very good political leadership, very good staff leadership. The streetcars stopped running in Kansas City in 1957. And so we will be they'll be once again back in Kansas City in 2015 if those things hold true.
Yeah. Okay, now let me bring in Sue Burke. She's president and owner of Kansas City Air Filter, who opposes this project. Sue, good morning to you.
Good morning.
What are your concerns about it, Sue?
Well, a number of concerns, including the cost of it, the extra taxes, sales taxes, property taxes that are going to be imposed on my business. I already have an extra layer of property taxes because I'm in the River Market Community Improvement District, so this is another tax on top of that tax. The sales tax increase is going to put me at a competitive disadvantage to my customer or my competitors who are located in other parts of the metropolitan area, and that is a one factor some people look at when they're deciding where they do business in buying the air filters that are used in their buildings. But the other issue of it is the physical rail line going through right down Grand Avenue in front of my building and not being able to continue to do business in this location. I can't get a straight answer from anybody at the city of how this is going to work.
Well, why can't you do business at that location any longer if streetcars are coming down your street, Sue?
Because I don't have a parking lot. My employees, my customers, the trucks that drop off and pick up have to park on the street. And my understanding is they're going to take out the street parking. So right now, trucks pull up in front of my front door to either load or unload with a forklift, and they're up against the curb, or sometimes they're in the lane of traffic. That's the only place they can go.
Sue, hang on just a second. Councilman Johnson is shaking his head saying this isn't right, what you're saying. Go ahead.
Yeah, we've had – we unveiled detailed lane alignments and parking preservation plans last week. Those are being presented in a series of public meetings that are occurring as we speak. One was last night at the library, and there's going to be one tonight and one tomorrow
night.
Yeah, and
I plan to attend the one across the street tonight.
It will run on Grand Street for one block. And
right,
in that
it's the block in front of my business.
In that one block, there will be on-street parking.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear that, Sue?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Is it a single line or two lines? Two rails.
It's going to be one rail currently. I mean, all this is subject to change, of course. We're still working through details. But the current plan is that there will be a northbound single track in front of Ms. Burke's building. The on-street parking will be preserved.
And throughout the district, Councilman, are there going to be two tracks or one, even once you get south of the River Market area?
In the River Market's unique because we had some historic issues of some historic buildings on Delaware. We had some issues of very steep grade on Fifth Street, and so we had to put in kind of a loop to work through those issues. But everywhere else, essentially from Fifth and Delaware North as it joins up to Main, or excuse me, Fifth and Delaware South to Union Station,
right,
will all be double tracked.
Okay, go ahead, Sue.
There's another concern I have, and again, I haven't heard a single – I can't get anyone from the city to give me an answer on this. The – I guess you could call it the car barn, maintenance shop, storage, wherever these rail cars would be overnight, because if you leave them out, they'll be vandalized. Where is that going to go? It makes sense that it would be at one end or the other of this proposed very short track to nowhere, and I don't think they're going to put it in at Crown Center. It makes more sense to put it in the River Market, and my block, where my building is a kind of run-down, crummy, 100-year-old building that would just be ideal to put a car barn in, and my concern is that I'm going to lose my property from eminent domain.
What about that, Councilman?
The federal government requires you to go through a process called National Environmental Protection Act. It's NEPA for short, and that requires you to assess the impact of any project like this on the human and natural environment. In order to do that, we have to tell the federal government where we think we might put the streetcar maintenance facility, because obviously they want to know what's that, is that going to impact Ms. Burke? That's the question. We have identified three locations. As this is subject to, as this is a real estate related issue, we have not unveiled those public locations or unveiled to the public at this time.
Why not?
Because when governments acquire real estate, typically they do so in a process that you want to be good stewards of the taxpayers' money. In other words, so part of that process is that there will be at the right time, and it will be this in the next few months, that those locations will be told to the public. I can assure you that it is not Ms. Burke's building nor any building on that block.
How's that, Sue?
Well, if that's true, but, you know, it's kind of like I don't believe it until I see it in writing.
So give me a sense of how much of a tax you'll be paying at your small business to pay for this new streetcar system.
from the estimates I can figure out on the property tax portion, it's not a whole lot, maybe $500 a year more based on the current value of my building.
Okay.
Now, if everybody's saying, oh, my gosh, you're in such a great location, you're at one end of the streetcar, your building's going to go up so far in value. Well, guess what? I don't want it to go up in value because that just means my taxes will go even higher.
Yeah.
Forcing me out to have to go look elsewhere. The biggest concern I have is with the sales tax hit, which is going to put between that tax and the other taxes pretty close to 10%, which there was an article in the Star a couple months ago saying that this puts Kansas City's tax burden as the 12th highest in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mayor wants to have another vote here shortly, either before or after this one, for more property taxes and sales taxes,
right,
for all the other things that need to be taken care of. Again, it's a big disincentive to do business with companies in Kansas City, Missouri. And I'm just a little guy. I represent 6 full-time jobs I have here. And
Sue, where would you go if you had to move? Where would you go?
Right across the bridge, 2 minutes to North Kansas City, where I've already heard from people up there. They would welcome my business. They would give me incentives to move. They would give me tax breaks up in that part of the city. And I wouldn't have to pay earnings tax anymore on half of my employees who don't live in Kansas City.
Sue, I've got to take a break here, but listen, I appreciate you taking a few minutes to join us, and hang in there, Sue.
Okay.
That's Sue Burke. She's president and owner of Kansas City Air Filter. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about streetcars in Kansas City. We'll get phone calls from Caitlin, Patrick, Robert, and Michael. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. What can the Kansas City area do to prepare for the huge influx of increasing numbers of retirees and elderly? You'll find our talk about aging in place at kcur.org. This hour, we're talking about streetcars in Kansas City. We're joined by Councilman Russ Johnson, who's worked very diligently on this project for Kansas City, Missouri, and David Johnson, who's a blogger at kclightrail.com. He's a transit user and lives downtown. You can join our conversation 816-235-2888. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Patty Ellis writes us this project long overdue. Bob Evans writes, when people talk about how cool Kansas City was way back when, they're talking about a town built around a streetcar system. But Cherish writes this, I live in South Kansas City. I'm not going to drive the 10 miles to get off the highway at 27th Street and drive to Crown Center and pay $1 billion for parking at a mall I want nothing to do with to ride a streetcar 2 miles to the River Market. Philip Correll writes back, of course they should. In fact, it should be a bi-state area-wide program. Lindsay writes us this, we may start small, but a large transit system isn't built in a day or a decade. I do not think we should tax only those residents who live in the transportation zone. A streetcar system would benefit the entire county, and a tax base should reflect just that. Let's go back to some phone calls here, and Michael from Kansas City, Missouri. Michael, you're on the program.
Oh, hello, Steve. Always listen to your program.
Thank you, Michael.
Listening to this conversation, you know, this long conversation about the streetcars and light rail, and no one's ever mentioned the old one and what it did and its problems. I mean, surely now with all the computers and the old records, you could investigate it from all different ways. I mean, did the company make a profit? How were the businesses along that area? And how many new businesses came up? We can't learn a lot of things. A lot of things have changed, but it seemed like there would be a great deal to learn from looking at the old one much closer. And, you know, was how many cases of eminent domain were involved, and, you know, mm-hmm. just all sorts of things,
right,
because there's records. You know, I'm not smart enough to do it myself.
Right.
But, you know, these computer people, they could do it. That was one of my fondest memories, was in riding streetcars. Not very long, but I remember them. They were fun.
Yeah, Michael, thank you. David, what can we learn from streetcars of Kansas City's past?
Well, I was just rereading the excellent book, one of the Kansas City Star books.
Oh, Kansas City by Rick Montgomery and Cheryl Casper, right?
I was rereading that over the weekend, just kind of trying to look for inspiration, you know, to continue the fight for this project.
And to get ready for this show, right?
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Doing your homework.
Doing my homework, exactly. And, you know, it was a 319-mile system reaching all directions.
319 miles.
Yeah, imagine that. That's how many square miles are in Kansas City today. And we had that many miles of track, 700 and something cars. And, you know, there was one point where, you know, technology was advancing so rapidly that you had cars being powered simultaneously in the city by animals, you know, horses, steam, and cable and electricity. And then to kind of answer the question about how those companies sort of dealt or how they worked within the city at that time, I mean, they were private for-profit enterprises. And that whole era, you know, the early part of the 1900s was rampant. I don't know what the word you would use, but they weren't great the pillars of society. I mean, we named things after them, Armour, Gillum, you know, but there were also names like Pendergast and, you know, things that...
But clearly the system failed by the 1950s in our love of the automobile, right?
Right, and that's why government has a role in transportation today. I mean, that's been a constant struggle in America, and we've always gone towards having the government have involvement in subsidizing roads, airports, ports, and... public transportation.
Yeah. Beth writes us this. They should be directly attached to gasoline usage so that one who drives less and hopefully uses public transit will benefit directly and immediately. And by my choosing to drive many times, taking more trips than I need to, will pay more for that and support the system. Having moved here from New York City, I had to purchase a car. I have spent many thousands of dollars along with insurance, maintenance, gas, etc., that I cannot spend in local businesses or save for retirement. Let's go back to some calls. Caitlin from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. I was actually just curious, have there been other cities somewhere in size and culture to ours that have actually utilized these streetcars? And if so, what have been the benefits to those communities?
What do we know about comparable cities who have gone the streetcar route, Councilman?
Well, what we know is Portland was the first city to do this. They did this about 10 years ago. And it was really novel at the time. And, you know, think about why weren't we doing this before? Well, nobody had really done it before. And Portland kind of invented the modern streetcar in North America. They love their system so much that they keep building onto it, and there's great success stories of redevelopment that have occurred.
Yeah, but the mindset in Portland, much more environmental, much more green than Kansas City. Can you make a comparison between Portland and Kansas City?
I think absolutely you can make a comparison. I mean, you look at some of the demographics and some of the real estate uses that they had are very, very similar to ours. But since Portland's happened, I mean, this has taken off kind of like wildfire. Now, there aren't a lot of other operational systems yet, but there are many systems being built. And let me tell you something. I was in Washington, D.C., looking at what they're called their 8th Street system. It's not operational yet, but the tracks are in the ground.
Yeah.
And you know what the cab driver told me? He said, these tracks, even though there's no trains there yet, he goes, this place used to be a dump. And now look at it. He goes, all these businesses have sprung up because of these tracks are going in the ground. It has completely transformed 8th Street, and it doesn't even operate yet. So this is where we're heading.
Brian O'Neill writes us on our Facebook page, I love the idea of better public transportation in KC. However, if anybody has ever been to a city with a streetcar, they know what a slow, inefficient mode of transport it is. In Portland, the streetcar is a joke. Residents talk about how it's much faster to bike or even walk if you want to get from A to B downtown.
Well, they got 15,000 people a day riding it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Back to some calls here. Let's go to Robert from Kansas City, Missouri. Robert, you're on the program. Our number, 816-235-2888. And our topic today, streetcars in Kansas City. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. I was at the open house yesterday at the library, and I thought it was informative. However, a couple of things that were mentioned bring me a little concern. First of all, the discussion of economic development, the thing that people don't talk about is that transportation primary focus should be to get people where they need to go in a timely economical fashion. If a city does that effectively, economic development happens on its own. It shouldn't be an end result of the transportation itself. Second of all, they were talking yesterday, this route is going to duplicate the MAX route that we already have. I've used the MAX many times. Get on at 10th and Main, go all the way down to Brookside. It works every 8 minutes. They're going to spend $100 million. When I was told yesterday, this is going to get you three streetcars working in about a 10-minute loop. So it's not going to add any efficiency to the current transit program, and it's going to do it for $100 million. I would say that this is kind of a lack of creativity on our part. Now, I live north of the river, so I don't have a financial dog in this hunt, right, as far as the taxes. But I do love my city, and I'm a designer by nature, and I think for $100 million, you could create an entire fleet of a little electric shuttles that go anywhere you want. You can change the routes at any time. You could create them in a modern way. The one thing that people don't talk about, the reason why ridership goes up a lot on these new streetcars is there's less stigma. Poor people ride buses. People don't want to say that, but a lot of people who will ride light rail won't ride a bus because they think there's a stigma. So if you create an entire fleet of electric shuttles or something that has no stigma, change the name, call them a tram, whatever, then you may get ridership going up at a lot smaller cost. So I think there's other things people need to talk about.
Councilman Johnson, what about this idea, you know, of $100 million is a lot of money. Why not try something different like electric shuttles?
Well, the caller is mentioned the 300-pound gorilla that's in the room. In the United States, you might as well put a sign above a bus door and say, only the poor can cross this threshold, because that is what we believe in the United States. As much as you go to other continents, you go to Europe, it's not that way. In London, they have a great bus system. It's great for families. It's heavily used by people of all demographics. We have a cultural dilemma here in Kansas City and in the United States, is that unless you're – we believe that the bus system's for poor working class, and that if you aren't part of that, you shouldn't get on it. So we have to solve transit for everybody, of course, not just the poor working class. And streetcar has a much broader appeal than the bus system.
David Johnson, the route that's been chosen here down Main Street for the most part instead of Grand, what do you make of that? Some folks say Main is a little bit narrower. It might create more problems on Main as opposed to Grand, which is a little bit broader. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you've got some of the best transit engineers helping the city plan the route. And, you know, HDR, which has worked on every streetcar project on the continent, doing the engineering work here. And they're showing right now, if you go to the public meetings that are tonight and tomorrow downtown, you can see, you know, exactly where the tracks are going to go, where the bump outs where you'll board at each even numbered block crossing Main Street. You know, I'd say they've done their homework and they've done it, and they've got the hard, you know, diagrams to show that. And as far as duplicating the MAX route, I live and work on the MAX route. I don't use the MAX downtown.
Why not?
Because it's circuitous, and they could have straightened out the MAX, but you know, that serves a commuting purpose again. So, you know, to Councilman Johnson's point, you know, the biggest ridership is coming in from, you know, the southern parts of Kansas City. They're not coming from downtown. So this is a route for downtown to circulate within downtown. And if you think it's just a duplication of the MAX, I mean, I'll have to show it to you in 2015.
You know, those meetings that our callers are referring to, there are two additional meetings, one tonight from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Steamboat Arabia Museum. That's in the River Market. And Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. at Union Station, the Arthur Stillwell Room. Again, you can come to those meetings and get a whole lot more information about what this is all about. Let's go to Stephen from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, thanks. I'm a big believer in public transit, especially in Kansas City. I'm just worried that this initiative, like some of our, you know, older initiatives, will go kind of the way of the light rail. And my question is, do we actually think it's real this time, and what makes it different this time around?
Councilman?
We put, I mean, what makes it different this time around is, one, we got a mayor that wants it, believes in it. I think some of our stumbling blocks in the path has been, you know, not had the political leadership it needed at the top.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great city manager and a great director of public works that get this and understand it. We have great city planning staff, and we have a council that's supportive of it. This council has appropriated and put millions of dollars into all the conceptual engineering work that's going on right now, $2.5 million. We've never spent $2.5 million trying to figure out how to do this before.
Mm-hmm.
This is in addition to the federal money that we got that decided the north-south component. And people say, why are you spending that money? Well, you have to. If you're going to do NEPA analysis, you got to hire people to do the NEPA analysis. And so we've never done this before on any of these other projects to this level of detailed study.
How much will a fare cost on the streetcar system, Councilman?
That is to be determined. There is a discussion underway, and it will continue the conversation. It will continue about exactly what the fare structure will be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is a strong desire to have some sort of pass available to the businesses and the people that live within the boundary of the district, since they are paying more, mm-hmm. and they should get an offset. But yet, I can't speak to those issues because we haven't determined them yet.
You know, Grand Boulevard had one important point in its favor. It's significantly wider, allowing more room for a two-track system. Yet a Grand Line would, of course, run in front of the Sprint Center, which frequently stages events in which the street is closed to cars. On one level, it made a whole lot of sense to me to run it down Grand because of the Sprint Center. But was that the issue? Sometimes you have to close the street and you can't have streetcars running down the street during those times?
There were actually 12 considerations made, and Main and Grand were compared on each of those 12 mm-hmm. items. And some of them had to do with bike pedestrian connectivity, some of them dealt with economic development, some of them had to do with ridership, and some of them had to do with service interruptions operations. And that report was in our alternative analysis we completed last year. On every one of those issues, it is either a tie between Main and Grand or Main won. Mm-hmm. Grand did not win a single one of those issues. Grand is closed, but the fatal flaw with Grand, to sum it up, is it's closed 21 times a year for mm-hmm. special events. So we need to preserve that festival atmosphere on Grand.
Okay. Let's go to Patrick from Overland Park. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I visit Phoenix quite a bit, and they've invested a whole lot of money into a fantastic system that connects all the athletic events and the cultural venues together. And I was wondering, it's cheap, it's clean, it brings all forms of the community together. I was wondering if Kansas City looked at their model.
We did. Phoenix has a great system, but it was it's one of the most expensive systems ever built. Their cost exceeded well over $100 million a mile. I mean, we just have to – ask ourselves, can we afford that kind of a system, or should we take a look at something smaller to start with?
Mm-hmm. Okay, Patrick. Thank you. Let's go to John from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, John.
Yes. About 10 years ago or so, Crown Center had a trolley system that ran between Crown Center and the market. And this was using a wheeled tram. And it seemed to me that you could build 5 or 6 of those and run it down to from the market all the way to Crown Center. Or not Crown Center, the plaza, and it would be a lot cheaper. We wouldn't have to tear up the road. You wouldn't have to spend all the money for cables and track, because a wheeled vehicle doesn't require that, and it would be a lot more efficient.
Okay, what about that idea, Russ? John?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's referring to the Downtowner bus, which, you know, its fate was sealed because it was a thinly veiled attempt to circulate people with just a bus.
Oh.
I think it was only a quarter, and I'm sure that they got rid of it for ridership. And it was before downtown sort of really got its legs, you know, going, and so it might have been ahead of its time. But, you know, the alternatives analysis process, which includes public input, talked to all the stakeholders, and everybody said, you know, I have a bus option and I have a rail option. I'm picking the streetcar.
Nicole writes this, as a downtown resident and property owner, I'm happy to pay for this project. Not only will my quality of life increase as a result, but I will also see the benefit in my property value. I am confident that Kansas City will see the same results as other cities who have seen great economic development along the routes of their streetcar lines. I guess we'll have to leave things right there. Russ Johnson, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Steve.
He's a councilman for Kansas City's 2nd Council District. And David Johnson's a software engineer. He runs lightrailkc.com. David, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
You'll find a map of the proposed route, details of this week's streetcar forums, information on the streetcar tax ballot measure, and podcasts of our show, all at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our show is produced by Steven Steichman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.